Hello and welcome to Faith Conversations. My name is Mel Lorenz, and I'm really glad you decided to listen today. We hope that you tune in every week, and if you are listening via the internet, you know that you can go to past conversations anytime you want. Just cometothebrook.org is where you can hear all kinds of interesting interviews with interesting people. And today, I'm really glad to have, I hope it will be a little fun, talking to Susan Isaacs, because her book called Angry Conversations with God, A Snarky But Authentic Spiritual Memoir, is both poignant and funny at the same time. Susan, thank you for talking to us today.
Oh, I'm delighted to be here.
Susan, tell us about your career. What do you do and where do you live?
Well, I live in Los Angeles. I've been an actor and writer for about over 20 years. I started in film production, but immediately got involved in acting. My first job was on Family Ties when I was still in college, and it all went downhill from there. No, I'm kidding. I had lots of, you know, career highs and career lows, and always felt like I was pursuing what God had called me to do and what I was good at, although there's often been a conflict between faith and art, I think, through history, but especially in the 20th century. Hard to reconcile those two, at least in the Protestant church. And I was also a comedian, and I often felt like I was too wild for the church and too tame for the world.
It's a hard place to be.
Talk about being between a rock and a hard place. It wasn't easy. It was not an easy path. Of course, I wish someone had told me that, or I had the ears to listen at the beginning of my life, saying, you know, God's called you to something and you're really good at it and it's going to be really hard. But of course, I really clung to the words of, you know, God will open the doors that no man can close, and he'll send you places and give you gifts and blah, blah. And I think it's human nature to cling to the positive, the promises, because the Bible is filled with stories that life is full of hardship, and I just didn't want to hear it. So I followed my dream. I got a lot of really great jobs and a lot of work and had a lot of promise, and I think I also made some mistakes along the way in my career and also in my spiritual life, and I had a lot of bizarre church experiences in mainline denominations, but we are talking about Los Angeles. So you can get all sorts of things going on.
Well, let's take one step at a time, Susan. First of all, I want to tell our audience that you will see Susan's face in various segments of Seinfeld, The Drew Carey Show, My Name is Earl, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, and Scrooged. Susan, I'm going to go and rent the DVDs of all of those and look for your face on them.
Pay close attention.
You came to a place of crisis in your life, which we'll come to in a few minutes. But tell us why the title of the book, why An Angry Conversation with God, A Snarky and Authentic Spiritual Memoir, and define snarky for us.
Well, I think snarky is a colloquial term for the snide, and I forget what the narc part. It's not like narking on somebody, but it means, you know, snide and clever. My original subtitle was Middle Class White Girl's Dark Night of the Soul, but they said, that's too long and it's too dark. So I said, you know, off the cuff, well, how about Snarky and Authentic Spiritual Memoir? And they're like, okay. I was like, wait. But Angry Conversations, part of it is a play on words, because there were these new agey books in the 90s called Conversations with God. And from my experience, they felt like, you know, God was just kind of this big hippie that said, hey, dude, whatever you want, man, it's all about love. And I thought, if I wrote down my conversations with God, where I was at the time, they would be very angry ones, because I had hit a low point in my life. I was jobless, loveless, and living over a garage. And that wasn't my idea of the great and happy life God had called me to. And so I had read this book that said that my relationship with God was supposed to be like a marriage. And I thought, all right, then, if this is a marriage, God and I need couples counseling. I need to get him in a room and ask him some questions like, you know, what are you thinking? What did I do that was so bad? I had a series of things that happened all at once, and they are middle-class white girls' problems. I have to step back and look at the larger picture. But when you're in pain, when you're in a crisis, it's very difficult to hear people say, well, you know, it could be worse. You could be in Somalia. It's hard to hear things like that, although, you know, with distance, you're able to get some perspective on your own problems. But my father had passed away. My mother had a stroke. My acting career died in New York, so I came back to Los Angeles, and then it died here. This all happened within about 6 months. This happened just all as my four best friends in New York got suddenly very successful. One was cast in a TV show in Los Angeles and flown out to LA, and the TV show was created by my high school boyfriend. So things got really close to me. And then I went back to New York for these weddings, and while I was, a friend called me and she said, just get off the plane, come see me, let's go for a walk. I know things are tough, but you just need to get out in the sunshine and enjoy some life. And as we were walking through Central Park, we stopped, and who should walk by us and not see us but my newly ex-boyfriend with a new girlfriend. And when I thought, like, why would God maneuver me into a city of 12 million people in a park 6 miles around to see that, I felt so hurt. And it started a longer process where I thought, I don't know if God is good. I don't know why he would do that. I really started to question things are deeper than just career or romance or where you are in your life, but what is really true about this God that I followed? I realized that the God in my head was not a nice guy, and I needed to deal with him because I had obviously, I'd grown up with faith, but the circumstances of my life and probably my own tweaked thinking, I had turned God into someone who was not interested in hearing what I had to say, who basically was like, well, you're not Somalia, so get over yourself. And that's the guy that I had to get into counseling.
That's an interesting phrase, the God that got into your head. How did that God, let's use a small g, how did that God get into your head in the first place?
Well, you know, we're human. And we are prone to making stupid mistakes. We may hear wonderful theology, and we may have great family and friends around us, but we're prone to twist God into a picture because we're fallen. We don't see things clearly. But I would say that having a family that had its own series of problems, I definitely started to see God the way my father was. He was very angry and broken, and God bless him. As well as the things that I picked up from the different church experiences. Like, you know, if you do well, if you obey God's laws, it will go well with you. I mean, usually that's true, that if you obey what God's commandments and you treat other people well and you work hard, it will go well with you. And that's all through the Proverbs. But I think it was easy for me to take some dysfunction of my growing up, tweaked experiences in the church, all well-meaning, plus negative things, and just start to twist them. Mm-hmm. I think it's very hard to stay on track. It's something we have to be diligent about. But I think when I got into a room, I went to a Christian therapist, and he was like, I want to hear what God sounds like in your head. Only you can tell me what he sounds like. And when I started to vocalize it, I thought, wow, who's that guy? And it was really fun writing him to be kind of like, you know, rah, rah, you know, he sounded like the Penguin in Batman. You know, he was very, yeah, get over yourself. And that was the guy that I had to fix.
Susan, there's probably a lot of people listening to this interview right now who are at kind of an impasse in their faith because what they've heard described as Christian faith, what they've seen modeled, what they experienced in their own church, there's just something not adding up. Can you provide any help for somebody so that they don't stay stalled at that position for a long time?
Thank you for asking that. It's very, very difficult. I think one thing that helped me was learning that God grieved with me, is that he grieves over the mistakes that churches and people in authority have done to us in God's name, that it really rankles him. And those people will be held accountable. But also, it was a very important lesson for me to realize that, like, my pastor was just a guy. He was full of contradictions. He was smart and funny and also very wounded. I think when you're in that place, that it's human nature to be hypocritical. It's human nature to puff yourself up. It's human nature to judge other people. It's not just in the church. And I had to come to accept the fact that I know the church is supposed to be different, but we are all human and we're all broken. And in order for me to get past that, I had to let it go. Not to say that what happened was okay. God's never okay with the hurt that's done to us. I mean, that cost Jesus his life. Sin cost Jesus his life, and it caused wounds to us. But we have to put that in the hands of God and say, I need you to take care of it because I can't carry the weight of other people's wrongs against me. It's too costly. We waste our life. And so when we feel hurt by those people, because I was hurt in many, many ways by people in the church, well-meaning people and some people who are not well-meaning. And I walked away. I turned the other direction, and I went and lived a few prodigal years that really messed me up. That was my sinful reaction to someone else's sin against me. But what I had to do is take it to the cross, grieve it, know that God grieved with me, and also let those people off the hook and let God deal with them so that I could be free to live my life. And it was really funny because when I was in my darkest place, not knowing if God was good, had no job, I ended up getting this job at a church office, and the pastor was kind of an egomaniac, but he was also really funny, and he was really nice to me, and he recognized that he was an egomaniac. He was the first person to say, oh my gosh, I have so many, you know, issues I need to deal with. And that was where God really showed me, look, he's just a guy. He's been put in authority, but you know what? He's also just a guy. And that really helped me to see him for who he was and let him off the hook. And I think things started to change for me. Of course, it's wrong when people in authority don't model spiritual authority. Of course, that's wrong. You know, the guy, you know, had to deal with his problems later, and I was glad that he did. But I think for the people out there who are listening who are very hurt by the church, you know, on behalf of the church, I'd love to say that I'm so sorry. That that's not Jesus' heart. It's not everybody. And that God sees that pain and he's very angry about it. There are a lot of really good people out there who really do model Christ's love. And everybody's human. When I started to see the same character defects in people all across the board, in every culture, in every, you know, little cultural niche, any parts of society, I realized it's not the church. It's human nature.
You're listening to Faith Conversations today. My guest is Susan Isaacs, who's the author of a brand new book called Angry Conversations with God, a snarky but authentic spiritual memoir. Susan Isaacs is a writer and performer. She's been in television, film, stage, and radio. And this autobiographical account talks about falling to a low place and then being lifted up by God. Tell us, Susan, about the lowest of the low points and what was it that started to bring a light into your life?
Well, I had two low points. The first low point was when I really defied God and had a couple prodigal years and I started drinking and I had some inappropriate relationships with men because I felt like God was holding me back from having a good time. So I went out and did that my way, and boy, it did not bring me the happiness that I thought it would. You know, that show Sex and the City, I thought, was such a lie. It had these great relationships between women, but the way that they dealt with sexual intimacy, I thought, completely defied what's true about, you know, women's nature, which is not to have a bunch of relationships. It's to bond and to settle down. That's part of our nature. But I tried that, and that really hit me at a low point. And I came back, I got sober, and I got into a 12-step program, and I started to let God in just a little bit. But I had been too burned by what happened. And then I kind of cobbled a life together and kept God at what I call a safe proximity. I went to church, I prayed, I had community around me. I met a really great guy who was what I call Jesus friendly.
What does that mean?
Well, he was like, yeah, I believe in God and Jesus and all that stuff. But he didn't find God in church. And I had been in a place in my life where I didn't find God in church. So I was like, well, I understand that. And he supported me, but he did not share that deep longing and the deep desire to connect through people at church, through community. That's not how he connected to God. And it became very lonely not being able to connect with God that way through the relationship. And then the second low point came when this, you know, serviceable life that I had cobbled together of, you know, enough acting work, enough community, enough relationship, it all came down all at once. When my father died and my mom had a stroke and my career ended and all my friends got married, when I went through a breakup. And that was the second low point in which I had nothing and I didn't even know if God was good. I've never felt so terrified in my life. I had always had faith. I had always felt God's presence. But at that time, even his presence disappeared. And I went to church and I panicked because I couldn't sense him there. And I thought, my ex-boyfriend was right. He's not here. You know, it was like, you know, Elvis has left the building. That's really how I felt. I was so devastated and so terrified. And I started to write about it. I went to a secular writers group and just started pouring my heart out. And some of the people in the group had had some kind of faith or other people were completely outside it. But they were drawn into the experience of wanting to know what it's like when you used to feel God's presence and what it's like to not know where he is. And then I found that job at the church office and started to get a base again, but I still didn't know what I could believe was true about God. And I basically had to strip everything I ever believed about God and start from ground zero and say, well, what do I know that's true? Well, you get a good therapist or a good spiritual director who's like willing to hear whatever you have to say. I had like two or three really good friends who just sit with me, you know, like Job, just sit and weep with you and say, it's okay, you are going to be okay. It sucks right now, but you are going to be okay. My sponsor in my 12-step program said, you know what, go to a meeting, call somebody else, find out how they're doing, get out of your own head, keep busy. And I had to start back with my therapist, who was a Christian, and say, regardless of how I feel, let's look at what the Bible says. There is this story of love. There is this story of the hound of heaven, the father who has compassion on his children, who says, you know, even if your mother forgets you, I will not forget. You are written on the palm of my hand. David says, you know, as a deer pants for water, so my soul longs for thee. It wasn't just me that wanted that experience. This is an ancient experience. And so I thought, okay, then that must not just be from me. And I had to just start step by step. And one of the things I had to confront was, if God loves me, it doesn't mean I'm not going to experience tragedy. That I am not immune from tragedy, however middle class or mild or severe those tragedies are. I mean, if my therapist said, if your theology doesn't work in Darfur, it can't work anywhere. Like those ideas like the secret, you know, manifest, you know, manifest what you want. I thought, well, how about the people in Darfur? They just want to manifest food or snacks, you know? And so I had to accept the fact that I need to love God for who he is and not what I can get out of him. Because it was very important for me to realize, you know, if this is a marriage, I married God for his money, what I could get out of him. I was a spiritual gold digger, and it was horrifying to recognize that about myself.
That brings to mind another line of thought, Susan. I want to ask you a question about our culture. You've lived in New York and Los Angeles. You've worked in the entertainment industry. You've seen whatever bright spots there are and the dark spots. What would you say from your experience we need to be aware of in terms of how our culture influences us and may at times really erode the faith that we have?
Well, yes, is my answer. It's very ironic that people start off as artists saying, I just want to have something to say, I want to make an impact, I have something in my heart and I want to express that. But then when these people are made into role models, they don't want to be the role model. Again, I think that's human nature. We want all the pleasure, but we don't want the responsibility. We, you know, with great stature comes great responsibility. And it's very sad to see that the people in entertainment that we look up to, some of those people aren't even mentally sound. And I think it's very important, not just in terms of entertainment, but what the culture in general tells us and teaches us, which basically is you deserve happiness, success, financial success. You deserve to be thin, pretty, married with lots of kids. You deserve to look like Posh Beckham, you know? And that's such a lie. It's such a lie. I read Joseph Campbell. He studied a lot of the religions and myths and cultures all around the world, and he came up with this idea of the hero's journey. And it's kind of true in general, human nature, the understanding that everybody has to go on a journey from innocence to experience and from childish narcissism to adult responsibility. And it was very important for me to recognize that part of the journey God takes us on involves a lot of conflict and tragedy in order to mature us. And that really is what's true about life. And when M. Scott Peck wrote that book, The Road Less Traveled, 30 years ago, and he basically says that life is hard, and once you accept the fact that life is hard, it's no longer hard because being hard is no longer the issue. When you accept that, when you realize, oh, you know what? I'm going through conflict now not because I failed, but because conflict is endemic to life. And it doesn't mean it has to ruin me because I need to find a way through this and out of it. But God's shaping my character. He loves me, and I don't see the whole picture. It doesn't mean to let go. Of course, you know, sucky things still suck, you know. And that was another thing when I was going through difficult times and I felt like I cried out to God, why can't you just be sad for me? Because I imagine him saying, well, you know, you wanted those things too much, or you made it an idol, and you need to learn character. That I heard him say, I am sad. And that was comforting. He didn't change the circumstances. But I think in terms of the culture around us, it's very important that we're very vigilant to what we're listening to. And it doesn't mean someone is teaching you like a professor. It's what you capture from the people around you. I mean, how many people in our culture that we consider role models have really gone through deep conflict and have a noble stature? I mean, it's not Britney Spears.
Susan, I've got time for one last question, and here's what I'd like to ask you. From where you stand today in your faith,
sure.
What advice would you give to other believers about where the real source of strength and stability of faith can be?
Well, it's definitely with God in the conflict and in the peace, that there is a quiet strength. What's that verse? My heart is not proud. Oh, Lord, my heart is not proud. I do not consider things more lofty than I, but like a weaned child, I will comfort and quiet my soul, like a suckling child. And, oh, Israel, hope in the Lord now and forever. That God is a very present help in trouble and in peace. And that when everything else fails, even when your own faith fails you, God will not. Because my faith failed me because it was based on me and my strength. And God stepped in and did an amazing work in my life, but he did it because he torched my life. He completely torched everything that I had based my life on and burned it to the ground. And then he started to rebuild a life in me, and he's continuing to rebuild it. And it was the best thing that ever happened to me, and it hurt like hell. Pardon my French. But it did, because I had to experience the fires of hell in order to get out of it.
Susan Isaacs is the author of Angry Conversations with God, a snarky but authentic spiritual memoir published by Faith Words. You can find it online or in your local bookstore. Susan, I really appreciate you talking to us today. I hope that your book is widely read. It's very honest.
Thank you.
You've made a good offering in the cause of Christ. Thank you very much.
Thank you. You're welcome.
God bless you, everybody, for listening. And come to thebrook.org as your place where you can listen to Faith Conversations anytime, 24/7. My name is Mel Lorenz. Have a great week.